So this coming Saturday, we have our first community work day of the year. So basically during a community work day, we practice working meditation, one of the names for it. And what I wanted to do was talk about both in practical terms, but also in spiritual terms, what we're doing in working meditation. In terms of sort of the practical nuts and bolts of it, next Saturday between 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock, everyone is welcome to come for all or any part of that time and basically help out with just the ongoing work that we have to do here, both on the property and in the temple building. What I do is very much kind of try to match people's physical abilities and skills and so on with things that I ask them to do. So some folks tend to stay indoors and other folks go outdoors. The bulk of the work we do is outdoors. So if you do want to come for any part of that time, dress in clothing that you're not averse to getting dirty. This Saturday, we've got moving rocks. We've got leaf raking, we've got moving branches, we've got moving firewood. I'll leave it at that. That can sink a lot of people, you know, in terms of making use of them, not doing them in. If you want to come out and you're going to be around during noontime, and if you're like me, you need something to eat and drink a bit, please bring some snackable, lunchable, drinkable stuff with you. It's a little bit borderline in late February as to what the weather's going to be like and if it'll be kind of warmish enough to sit outside and visit with each other while we're snacking. I do provide work gloves in case you don't have any. It's very much the case that if you bump into any of the folks who've been here for a long time, this is your temple. This is maybe not exclusively, but, you know, this is your place of training. And by offering an hour or so of your time and energy to help with the temple, you're basically helping the temple in its running and continuing to make it the place that it is. So it's just one other way of offering and supporting your place of training. Hopefully what I just said gives you an idea of what you could expect if you do come Saturday or for any future Saturdays to help with the ongoing community work. In this book, Serene Reflection Meditation, it's also available online as a PDF download. You can also get the on-demand print. We use the company called Lulu. In this book, there's a lovely article written by Rib Master Daizui. It's called Every Minute Meditation. And basically what it is a very succinct and yet very thorough description of how we do working meditation. And he says that it's a practice common to many schools of Buddhism and is known variously as mindfulness training, working meditation, or every minute meditation. And he says the method can be summarized in 5 steps. First step is do one thing at a time. The second step is pay attention to what you are doing. Step 3 is when your mind wanders to something else, bring it back. And then step 4 is repeat step 3 a few 100,000 times. Professor Daizui leaves that very open. He says, he doesn't say if that's within a day, within a morning. And then finally, step 5 is, but if your mind keeps wandering to the same thing over and over, stop for a minute. Maybe it is trying to tell you something important. I see working meditation, or I see these 5 steps they can basically be applied to anything that we're doing during the day when we're awake. That also includes doing formal seated meditation. So I almost see formal seated meditation as kind of a subset, a particular case of every minute meditation or working meditation. The reason it's so important to do formal seated meditation is because it's good to take time every day to actually do the simplest thing you can do while you're awake, which is just sitting there facing a wall. So in formal seated meditation, that's the one thing you are doing. You know, do one thing at a time, just sit and pay attention to just sitting. Now, when you come to the temple on a community work day, as is traditional with any temple, any monastery, when we have work periods, is you always bump into the person overseeing the jobs. And I do the best I can. What I try to do is very specifically, very clearly give you the job description, what it is that you're being asked to do. And so that becomes do the one thing at a time. So it might be moving stones from this one place into some containers. It might be raking leaves in a particular area and putting the piles in another particular place. Notice how River Master Daizui says in step 5, if your mind keeps wandering to the same thing over and over, stop for a minute. Stop for a minute, maybe it is trying to tell you something important. And one of the things he's talking about there is what we're doing in meditation, one way of describing it is that we're paying attention to what we're doing. We're listening. We're being open. We're being very attentive to what's there. So that if your mind keeps coming to the same thing over and over again, we'll pay attention to that, listen to that. It could be trying to tell you something important. And you can kind of turn that around a little bit. What's really interesting is that in our order, we put a lot of emphasis into, we have people who are younger at the practice, and we really emphasize those who are more senior. In the case of, say, a monastery, you have more senior monks. And there was a period of time when I was a novice monk, and we would go to the more senior monk and basically, what can I do? How can I help? And a huge amount of emphasis was placed on really paying attention to and listening to what was being asked. And over again, I would go off and do the job, and then the monk would come and check in on me a bit later and say, that's not what I asked you to do. Maybe outright, you're doing the whole thing differently than I asked you, or you're not doing a part of it the way I asked. And what we're doing is we're using that particular approach of things. There are other ways of doing it, but we use that particular approach to actually teach each and every one of us how to really pay attention to what's going on in front of us, what's going on in our meditation. And what was interesting is that over and over again, I could see how when I wasn't doing what was being asked, there are a few times when I was so busy in my head, I just really didn't hear fully what was being said. Or I heard what was being said, and at one point it's like, no, I'd rather do it a different way. So there was that aspect of it. Sometimes I heard what was being asked, and frankly, I didn't quite understand what was being asked. But I was too chicken to say to this very senior monk, could you please clarify that a bit more for me? So in all of these cases, I would take it as best as I could and say, okay, this is what's being asked. I'm assuming that what's being asked, I will trust that that's good. I'm here because I'm wanting to do what's being asked. But then over and over again, I could see how my own attachments, my aversions, my busyness in my head was getting in there. And there wasn't just this direct, kind of very clear receiving of what was being asked and then just simply bowing to it and doing it. Over time, though, that does become the case. And one of the real deep and significant aspects of that is that, backtrack here a minute, if we're really, really just involved in our own stuff, our desires, our aversions, our heads are busy, we're not going to be hearing that deeper stuff coming up in our meditation. But over time, with practice and learning how to just be still with things and listening more in a general sense, we'll just get a sense in our meditation, well, you know, try this, don't do that. And because of the practice we've been doing all along with people senior to us, we've gotten better and better at, it's like, oh, okay, there's something being asked in my meditation. I think I will do my best to try that. And we might be like, well, it's not quite what I wanted to do, but we've kind of worked through that over time. Later on in the article, Master Daisu says, sometimes it's helpful to add a step zero in, because step one is do one thing at a time. But I know that all of us in our lives, when we're getting up in the morning, if we were to chart it out, there are all these myriad things that we can do that need to be done during the day. Where do I start? And what happens over time with the practice of working meditation is that we get better and better at just sort of sensing within that stillness and that quietness what's good to do. So step zero, Rebbe Master Daisui said, is decide what you're going to do. And to me, decide what you're going to do is, what's the step before zero? First of all, just simply carry on with meditating, be still. Be open, you know, listen. And things just kind of niggle at us, bubble up. Things come to mind. And then step zero, decide what you're going to do is, within all of that stuff that's kind of bubbling up and presenting itself, pick one. Usually the way we come at it most of the time prior to having a practice is we kind of sit there and think about it. You know, analyze it. When we come to practice and we start having a meditation practice, we can add more to that. That same stuff will still be going on. We have our usual way of figuring out what to do, but meditation adds a whole other area to that. And over time, we realize, oh, okay, last time I followed that niggle, it worked out pretty good. Here's this other niggle coming up. I'm like, you might have this self-reaction to it, but it's like, oh, wait a minute. Last time I did that, it worked out pretty good. Let's try it again. The pay attention to what you're doing is really interesting, because immediately when you hear the word pay attention to what you're doing, almost invariably what kicks in is the wrong thing. Namely, your mind is like, oh, I need to pay attention. And the reason that's a problem is because that kind of paying attention is that we're kind of focusing in on something. Focusing has to do with narrowing things down. Meditation has to do with just simply being open to what's there. It's much softer, it's much broader, much more open. That's what being meant by pay attention to what you're doing. And oftentimes, do one thing at a time, that can get, we can misunderstand that also. Let's say the one thing that you're doing is you're raking leaves. Well, that's quite a complex process. You have a tool. But that's what you're doing. You're not raking leaves at the same time that you have your iPad or iPod or something with your earbuds in your ear. You're not doing that at the same time that you're raking leaves. You're there fully with breaking of the leaves. You're there like you're there when you're sitting and meditating. When we're sitting and meditating, you know, any number of emotions, feelings, thoughts will come up. Mental activity comes up, and so on. We're aware that that's happening, but we're also aware enough and paying attention enough to seeing when that starts veering over into we're getting involved in it. We're starting to chain along our thoughts and so on. That's not just sitting. One of the criteria that I'd always ask myself when I'm meditating is, do you need to be doing this to be sitting there? Most of the time, the answer was no. I don't need to be thinking, remembering something to just sit there. The same applies to when we're moving rocks or raking leaves or something similar. So for myself, and I've been kind of observing this the last week, just kind of in preparation for this talk about working meditation. So first thing in the morning, I'll go pop into the bathroom. I'll shave, wash up my face, that kind of thing. And I have a full day ahead of me. And I have this mental list of all the stuff I have to do. But what will happen is I'll be standing there shaving and I'll be like, you're not shaving. You're thinking about what you're going to be doing after breakfast. In other words, I've gotten caught up in thinking about all the stuff I need to do in the day. Fair enough, there's stuff that needs being done during the day. But that's a really good example of what working meditation is trying to get us to do is, oh yeah, I'm shaving, do that. Oh yeah, I'm brushing my teeth, just come back to brushing your teeth. And that's why Master Daizui says, do that 100,000 times, is that the next minute or so, I might be off somewhere else again. Decide what it is you're going to do. I'm brushing my teeth right now. I'm shaving or whatever. Now, it could be, according to what he just said, if a certain thought keeps coming to mind over and over again, then what Master Daizui does is he suggests, put down what you're doing right then. And I have seen many, many times over the years, my fellow monks will be out working somewhere. And then I'll look at them, they're just standing completely still. No, they're not raking at all. They're just still. Probably what was going on was what Reverend Daizui recommends is, okay, you've noticed that thought's coming up over and over again. Just stop and direct your attention to that. See what's there, what's going on. So you're just still and quiet with it for a little while. Maybe something comes up, maybe something doesn't. It's like, okay, that thought keeps niggling at me while I'm brushing my teeth. Okay, I'm going to stop for a minute. Yeah, maybe I should actually get on with doing this thing. It's like, oh yeah, there's a deadline with that. I probably better get it in the mail. And the postman comes at a certain time. You know, so you get the scenario. It really comes back to more and more we learn to trust the meditation that we're developing that's unfolding over time and trust that to basically inform us of what's good to do during the day. As you can imagine, as it is the case with all of us, there are certain jobs that we enjoy doing much more than others. And usually the way it works for me is that maybe in meditation or sometime during breakfast, it'll niggle at me. It's, you know, it's like you've been putting off this one bit for quite a long time now. You really need to go clean out the gutters. And it's like, yeah, but I'd much rather go do this other thing. And again, it's a lot of trial and error. I'll ignore the gutters, because there's something much more fun to do. It'll come up again. One of the interesting things about the meditation practice is that it's a very active, very dynamic, very expressive thing. It's not just finding a place where we're at peace and calm and so on. It's very much an engaged, interactive thing with your life. And if you keep ignoring the little niggles that come up in meditation about you should go do these things, and by ignoring them, you don't go do those things, your meditation practice, just the kind of things that unfold in meditation, they start stagnating. One of the sort of a classic example of that is that I think I've mentioned in the past that we have this bi-weekly ceremony in the monastery where you go up to the altar. There's a master standing in front of the altar and you ask them a question. And it's usually a question, you know, you're wanting to kind of deepen your understanding spiritually for yourself. And this one monk came up with that same intent of wanting to deepen their practice, understand things deeper spiritually. And before he could even get his question out of his mouth, the abbot said, "Get the painting done." He was, you know, he was, before becoming a monk, he was an artist, was asked to do a painting in one of the side shrines, a very big painting. It's quite beautiful. Mm-hmm. I did a really nice job on it. You know, it takes time to do a nice painting. The abbot was voicing his meditation that was saying, what you need to do before you proceed with anything else is get this painting done. Now, the wording here is really interesting, and we can't avoid using words like this because of our language. Rinpoche Master Daizu says, maybe it is trying to tell you something important. Rarely do I actually ever hear a voice or sort of something in my head saying something. But over and over again, I will get a sense of go that way, do that thing before that other thing. And we all have language for that. You know, Reverend Master Daizu, we use that, but don't confuse yourself by thinking, oh, if I'm meditating, I'm going to start hearing voices. Maybe every now and then, but not very often. You will be getting niggles, hunches. You'll just have a sense of, oh, that seems good to do next. But again, it's each and every one of us kind of develops this relationship with that ongoing movement of life. And what I wanted to do was just bring up a few quotes from this book called Realizing Genjo Koan. For those of you for whom this is the first time I'll be reading from this book, it's written by a Soto Zen monk. He lives back in the Midwest. He's been a very prominent translator of Great Master Dogen, who's the founder of Soto Zen in the 1200s. And he's Japanese, but he's been living in this country for decades now. And he has this beautiful way of bridging the understanding of Dogen as a native Japanese speaker and so on, but having lived in American culture for as long as he has. For many of us, it's been a real bridge to getting a sense of what Dogen talks about. Because Dogen is not an easy read. He's not easy to understand. Chaucer wasn't either. And I think Chaucer came after Dogen in terms of time. Why is it that when we sit still, quietly, and listen, and when we're just open, how is it that something important may be passed on to us? How is it that we get niggles? How is it that we get a sense of what's good to do? It's actually really, really straightforward answer, but I want to try to unpack that a little bit more. So here are a few lines to read. He says, the self, who we recognize as who we are, our awareness of our bodies and minds, the self is a part of all beings. Each of us is living together with all things within the network of interdependent origination, and there is no separate self that exists outside this network. Interdependent origination, I won't go into that in much depth, but it's a Buddhist teaching that's describing the fact that actually we are all completely interdependent with everything else. To the extent that he says that there is no separate self that exists outside of this interdependent connection. The self that we are is the self because of how the world is and the particular circumstances that we grew up in that has made us who we are. And he continues, he says, although this is the basic reality of our lives, we usually don't see it. He says, we create a personal picture of the world that is based on our limited life experiences and other conditions that obscure the sense of being completely interconnected. And then he says, it is a delusion because our personal views place us at the center of the universe as the all-important subject and treat things other, in quotes, than us as objects to be manipulated. Yet in the reality of Buddha's life, we are connected with and supported by all things. The self is not the subject of reality, and other things are not its object. We are, in fact, one with all things in the entire universe. So when we come to move rocks or to rake leaves or to do a job, our perspective, our sense is that here am I, I'm going to go do this thing. I'm going to go interact with this separate thing from me. And that's not the way it is. By actually doing working meditation, we're actually learning the reality that we're actually not separate from anything else. It can be a little bit tricky in terms of using the language. When you go stand in front of that yard of leaves, you are those leaves in the sense that you're not separate from them. Okay, let's draw this out just a little bit more. Prior to this part I'm going to read, he was talking about, you know, the phrase about we are what we eat. And he's talking about primarily food. He says, there is no me that exists other than the things that make up my body and mind. We are intimately connected to things in our environment, so much so that they are actually part of us. And he continues, he says that we are intimately connected to all things in our environment, so much so that they are actually part of us. We are all the things that we experience. We are created by them. And then he goes on to say that we're created by them, but then also because we have choice and we interact with those things, we actually affect them also. So there's this ongoing reciprocal relationship. The situation creates me, I act based on that, and I affect the situation. And so there's this constant give and take. There's this give and take to the point where over time that just kind of drops, and there's simply just what's there. And the situation itself just calls for or asks for us to do things in certain ways, to respond to it in certain ways. This Saturday, I could mischievously pop out there if you're raking leaves and say, well, why did you rake that particular part there first? Why not this other part over here? In part, I would hope you wouldn't be able to give me a rational explanation, because as we know, rational explanations are always subject to debate. Did you take this into account? When I was a novice monk and I was in the position of what's called the head novice, it's the job of the head novice to basically lead and direct the fellow novices. And we had finished a long week-long retreat. Normally, for big retreats, we rearranged the dining hall in the monastery to accommodate lots of people eating there. But then we knew that once people were going to leave, we needed to put the tables back in a certain way for just the smaller monks community that was there. And so I was in the dining hall and another novice walked in and I said, could you help me with rearranging these tables? They were handmade, very big, heavy tables. So it takes a bit of work to rearrange them. First thing that came out of his mouth was, why? You know, and in a sense, he was said, you know, can you please justify your request to me? Can you give me a good reason why I should do this hard job? That was kind of the subtext. I knew that, though. I knew that, monk. What I said was, seems to me like it'd be a good thing for us to do. So he somewhat grudgingly started helping me. Less than 5 minutes later, two of our most burliest, strongest senior monks walked into the room. And they're like, oh, can we help? What would have taken the two of us quite a long time was done literally 5 minutes later. That's a really good example of, you know, in hindsight, I'm like, okay, maybe that's why they knew it was time for me to be the head monk, the head novice, because I was starting to learn how to pay attention to that stuff that comes up in meditation. What comes up in meditation is the fact that we're not separate from anything else. And the situation itself that we're in can inform us as to what we can do. I didn't have any idea why it bubbled up, let's start moving the tables. But I'd been at it for many, many years at that point. And I'm like, okay, I'll trust this. I'll go with this. I think what I'll do is kind of wrap this up, at least in terms of the quotes, with one bit here. So the title, Realizing Genjo Kōan, the word Genjo Kōan is the title of one chapter in a very large work that Great Master Dogen wrote during his lifetime. And the Genjo Kōan is the very first chapter in this work. And in the Genjo Kōan, Great Master Dogen has this one very particular theme he keeps coming back to over and over again. He comes back to it in all sorts of different ways. He has this phrase where he says that to convey the self toward all things and to try to control things is to be deluded. Put it another way, to be deluded means you're just not quite getting what Buddhism has to offer, what it's pointing to. Sometimes we can take deluded as sort of like, you're bad, you're doing it wrong. It's more like, okay, fair enough. You're at that point. You can actually go deeper. You're still not stepping into what Buddhism has to offer. So what he's saying is, usually the way we live our lives is, here's me, here's myself, and there's this stuff going on around me. I'm going to step towards it, and I'm going to control it. I'm going to do with it what I think I should do. Well, when we convey ourselves towards all things, what we end up with is just ourself again. And the reason at some level all of you are here and come here is because at some level you realize the self thing isn't just quite working the way you'd hoped it would, the way you wanted it to. So he continues by saying, in this case, we end up simply imposing our own limited self-centered concepts of practice onto the world around us. But, you know, we've been doing that since we were born to one degree or another. That's part of being human. And we carry on with that until we get to a point where we're realizing, hang on a minute, isn't there something more than this? And then he continues, he says, but when we drop our self-centered motivations and allow all things to come toward us to carry out practice, this is realization. This is enlightenment. So in meditation, I'm using that in the broadest sense, when we're simply trying to be open with, present to, still and quiet with just where we are, what's going on, we allow all of those things around us to come toward us and carry out practice through us. I kind of see myself at times as like a tool. I'm a very skilled tool. I've got quite a skill set in various areas. I could do any number of things, but I allow all of those things to come to me, the situation I'm in, and allow them to ask me to do what's good to do. And then he continues on just a little bit more. He says, this means that we cannot practice by ourselves. The subject of practice is not one particular person. It is all things carrying out practice and realization through the individual's body and mind. We're, as it were, giving ourselves and all of our myriad skills in service of the greater life that we're within. And when we do that, when we approach something or we're just meditatively within a certain situation, we're quiet enough, we're open enough, we're still enough just to do the work that's being asked of us. And at the very least, and by saying that, I mean that there's oftentimes much, much more than that. But at the very least, when we've actually sort of entered into that relationship with something, where we've kind of become one with the work we're doing, the joy is that there's just such a relief. The aches and pains at all sorts of different levels that we have as a self, they just kind of fall to the wayside in our thorough being with and interacting with just what's in front of us. Oftentimes I experience that in hindsight. A job is done and I'll realize, oh, that was really wonderful. I wasn't there. You know, the self that's kind of always viewing and assessing and judging and so on, it just did the work at hand. So it's this whole thing about letting all things come to us. They're actually already there. They come to us by just being open and still and quiet. Dare I say, being kind of reverent and kind of compassionate. You know, and I know a number of you, either currently or in the past, have jobs where you've worked with other people. I know a number of you that are still actively parenting, or in the past were actively parenting and now have adult children. There's something about the immediacy of people, other people in your life, that the immediacy, they insist on you stepping outside of yourself and actually addressing what's right in front of you. And I've mentioned this to many people who I've known before having kids, and then when they've had young kids and so on, that they're going to be some of your most wonderful opportunities to deepen your meditation practice, to just fully open to what's in front of you. Sort of like, well, no, it's not what I'd planned for today. Reality has much, much greater plans for our life than we do. Reality has much, much more wonderful plans for our life than we do. Reality wants to give us all of reality. The self wants some good stuff, but Don't settle for less than the whole, because that's actually what we fundamentally are. And so working meditation, your life as you experience it in any given point is just the tip of the iceberg. The important thing is that it's the part of the iceberg. The tip of the iceberg is not separate from the whole iceberg. But we realize that simply by coming back to meditation over and over again. Just keep opening up to what's there. And the things that come to us, they simply inform us what's good to do. And when we follow that informing, that's realization, that's enlightenment. That's how we just allow ourselves to join in to the reality of that oneness of everything. It's amazing that moving rocks and raking leaves, it'll do that for you. Or brushing your teeth, or helping your kids get off to school, or whatever it happens to be for each and every one of us.